Rick, I think most people know about Star Trek, specifically the original show that was on NBC in the 1960s, now usually referred to as TOS, the original series by fans. But what is Star Trek Phase Two?
So Star Trek Phase Two is a continuation of the original series. It was started, the first episode came out in 2005. It's web-based, created by executive producer James Colley, who is a Star Trek fan from the earliest days. And he really wanted to do a series that just sort of followed on the adventures of the five-year mission.
And he actually was the first Captain Kirk, correct?
Yes. Yeah, James was the original Captain Kirk for the series, the Phase Two series. And then recently, because of his own work schedule, has brought on another actor to take that role.
How is the show done? I mean, it's done in upstate New York. It's not done in Hollywood like the original one was. And there are a lot of volunteers involved in it.
So the series is shot in a small studio in Port Henry, New York, which is near Ticonderoga. And it's actually been converted into a number of sets that are absolutely faithful reproductions of the set from the original. If anything, they're slightly higher quality in terms of design and materials available. And we have it's an all-volunteer production, and a number of the folks that are involved are actually professionals. They do this sort of thing in their real lives. And it's just amazing, the work, and it's a labor of love for everyone. They give up vacation times and spend their own money to come and shoot this show.
Some of the people who were on Star Trek, the original Star Trek show, have, in some cases, reprised their roles. Others who work behind the scenes have also been involved, and even some people who were on the screen in some of the follow-on series have become involved in it. That isn't very typical of a fan-based production.
I think that really shows the difference between this level of fan-based production and sort of the, you know, three guys in a camcorder in their garage kind of thing. This is very much done with a level of professionalism. In fact, James Colley shared a story with me where he was working with one of the original series writers, David Gerrold, who wrote the popular episode, The Trouble with Tribbles. And they were going back and forth on some story points. And all of a sudden, Gerrold stopped him and said, "You know what this reminds me of? You remind me of, James, is you remind me of Gene Kuhn, who was one of the senior producers and an outstanding writer for the original series." He says, you challenge me in the same way. So that's just an example of the kind of love that goes into the show.
If you watch the episodes online, you know, very quickly, it becomes evident that this, as you say, is not three guys with a camcorder in their garage. You know, the space scenes are very well done. They're CGI alien characters that you would see on a Hollywood movie. It must take hours and hours of time to do this, and no one's getting paid for it. How does that happen?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And again, it's just the fact that there are so many people that just love this show and really wanted the original series to continue. The whole approach and view of the future, which was very optimistic at a tough time in history in the 60s. A lot of turmoil, a lot of upheaval going on, both, social change. There was, there were assassinations. There was the Vietnam War and a lot of things going on at the time. And Star Trek really came out and spoke to a lot of those things. Well, in some respects, we're kind of facing the same thing today. And some of those messages still resonate, and those are the kind of things that the folks at Phase Two try to work into their production and do it very well.
Do you think that that's why the original Star Trek inspires such devotion in its fans, that some of the follow-ons, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and others, while very popular, just really haven't... You don't see people going out making new episodes of Star Trek Voyager, for example.
That's right. Well, you never know. There seems to be an untapped well. The beauty of this is that CBS, who now owns the rights to Star Trek, is supportive of fan productions within some very strong parameters.
Mainly that you don't make any money on it.
Mainly that you don't make any money on it. That's right. I think you're exactly right. The message that came out of the original series, the hope for humanity and the integrity of the people involved, is something that just continues to resonate through the decades. And that is something that Phase Two has very successfully captured.
You yourself are a published science fiction writer and have written two scripts for the show. How did that happen?
Well, I had actually watched one of the last episodes that came out of Phase 2 called Enemy Starfleet, and really enjoyed the show. It was written by an outstandingly talented writer, David Gallander. And to make a long story short, I got involved on an online chat with some folks, and I said, I sure wish that Phase 2 took unsolicited scripts. And one of their producers contacted me and said, well, we do. Why don't you pitch us? So I did. And that culminated about 2 years ago in a phone call from James Colley saying, I love this story. I want to make it. This was the first episode I wrote, Bread and Savagery. And we shot that last summer. So very exciting, total dream come true for a Star Trek geek like me who's been following the show since I was a little kid.
Yeah, without any spoilers, what's the gist of that story?
Well, Bread and Savagery is a sequel to an original series episode called Bread and Circuses. And for anyone who might be listening, this may recall it's an episode where the Enterprise visits a planet that's a 20th century version of the Roman Empire. And there are a number of parallels going on at that time that mirror what happened in Earth history in the ancient Roman Empire. And I sort of took that as to the next level. There's some, without giving any spoilers, some revelations that come out of the original episode that I wanted to say, well, what would happen if we sort of carried that out a few years? And so Bread and Savagery happens 2 years after Bread and Circuses. And some very big events emerge, including a surprise villain and some things that I think will resonate even with audiences today.
Faith, religious faith, played a big role in that episode, as I recall. I assume it does also in your follow-on.
There is definitely an element of that. Being a man of faith myself, that does enter into most everything that I write. It's not intended to be a gospel tract, per se, and I don't want any misunderstandings in that regard. But definitely an adventure that has that's a key element in it.
Now they're finishing up the shooting of that episode, and that should be available fairly soon.
Right now, we're hoping, looks like it'll probably be around fall that Bread and Savagery will come out. Expect another episode to happen before then. This year is actually the 10th anniversary of the beginnings of Phase 2, and so the hope is that we'll get a couple of episodes out yet this year.
They've accepted another script, which shooting will start on fairly soon. What's the story on that one?
So funny story about this is while we were shooting Bread and Savagery last summer, the new actor playing Captain Kirk, Brian Gross, who's been on NCIS, he had a small part in the movie Red Tails. He made a comment that his wife is an actor and would like to be involved. And so James threw a challenge out there. He said there's a certain part of Trek lore, which I won't get into, but he would like to address that they needed a strong female lead. And I suddenly threw my hand up in the air and said, I'd love to write that. And he challenged me to do it. Within 48 hours, and this is while we're doing the shoot, I'd written a treatment that he really, really liked. And that's evolved into a script. And so Brian and his wife, Jace King, will be part of that during the shoot this summer.
Can you tell us just a little bit about what the story involves?
Well, it's a little bit of a flashback episode. There will be some remembering of things that happened in the past. But also this deals with a story that's part of Trek lore that has been dealt with in, you know, maybe in people's stories and that sort of stuff and cast off comments, but not really directly on the screen. And I don't want to give anything more away more than that, but let's just say it was a thrill for me to write.
Anyone who watches the Star Trek Phase 2, I think will find the, shall we say, the acting style reminiscent of the original show. But the people behind it have been very emphatic, apparently, that they don't want this to be a parody. They don't want people pretending to be William Shatner acting as Captain Kirk, for example, or Leonard Nimoy being Spock. Do you think it's difficult for the present-day actors to inhabit such a, you know, frankly, an iconic role as Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock and not do it in a way that comes off as parody?
I will tell you that the actors that are involved in this take the roles very, very seriously. I remember last summer I sat in the makeup room when the men that are playing Kirk, Spock, and McCoy were getting their makeup touched up, and Spock and McCoy were going back and forth about a line that I had written for McCoy, and John Kelly, who plays McCoy, turned to me and said, you know, hey, this is the line. I'm struggling with it a little bit. Can you help me understand? You know, and that really, which was amazing to me, I was sitting in the room surrounded by these three, characters. That was pretty amazing. But what really underscored to me is that they do want to take their own approach to it. They don't want to do a parody. They don't want to pretend they're DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner, because that then becomes a joke. But yet they want to honor what's come before. And I would think that that's an especially difficult challenge for an actor, to bring your own perspective to it, without copying, but without going so far off the map that it just doesn't seem like the same character at all. I will say, the folks Brian Gross, Brandon Stacey as Spock, John Kelly as Dr. McCoy, Charles Rood as Scotty, and all the others that are involved just do an absolutely outstanding job of nailing that balance.
Does the cinematic reboot by J.J. Abrams and company have impinged at all on this, and maybe only in the case of audience expectations?
I would say really that, and I think J.J. Abrams and his team have been very deliberate about saying that theirs is a sort of a different universe, a different take on Star Trek.
And they blew up the planet Vulcan.
There's a difference right there. And what the Enterprise is, like a half mile long or something like that, you know, like 10 times the size of the original and so forth. I will say that I enjoyed the 2009 movie. I suspect I will enjoy the one that's coming out here in just a few weeks. But it's not the original Star Trek. And you really have to watch it, in my opinion, you have to watch it that way. And if you go into it thinking, I'm just going to enjoy a fun little space adventure with, you know, some people that take the story very seriously, you'll enjoy it. But it really does do a different take on the Star Trek theme.
Getting back directly to Phase 2, another thing that strikes a viewer who's familiar with the original Star Trek is the music. It's straight out of the original series.
That's right. And the Phase 2 team got permission to use really all the characters, the designs, the themes, the music, all of that. And right down to the way they did design the sets. I know, for example, that I've just been reading on one of the websites that the production crew maintains that they've been installing the precise style glass that was used in the transporter pads. And most people might watch this and go, what difference does it make? But it really, again, underscores that these people take this very seriously, and they want it to be an absolute faithful continuation of the original Star Trek.
According to the webpage, the idea is to complete the Enterprise's famous 5-year mission, which is discussed in the opening of the original show. So they want to do 22 episodes, I believe, in all. Do you think it will go beyond that, though, if they reach 22, just keep on going if it's a success?
That's a great question. And I guess the answer is, who knows? It's taken roughly 10 years to get to the point where we're, you know, working on the 11th, 12th episodes. So that's another, you know, you think another decade of going through that, and people have, you know, lives and that sort of thing. But I will say the commitment is unwavering. I think folks would like to do it as long as they possibly can, for as long as there's an interest in it among the viewers.
There isn't a lot of science fiction on new science fiction shows on television these days. There seem to be in a bit of a lull with that genre. But do you see yourself trying to write for other shows that may come along or that are on the air now?
My dream is that they bring Firefly back, and I would have a chance to write for them.
That's a whole separate discussion.
Yeah, that's right. I think Joss Whedon's a little busy right now, but I would be interested in doing that sort of thing. I think it's a different experience. There are a lot more challenges that you have to go through to write for Hollywood. At the same time, I would say that the folks at Phase 2 are as quality-minded on the material that they receive as anybody you'll see in Hollywood. So in a way, I feel like I've already kind of hit that bar, and it feels good.
that does bring up a question. As we mentioned, the show Star Trek Phase Two is done in upstate New York, not Hollywood. Upstate New York is not well known as a production center for this sort of thing. Was the decision conscious, made consciously to not do it in a place where this work is normally done?
Well, the answer actually is quite simple. Is Ticonderoga is where James Cawley lives and he grew up, and so he wanted to do the show, you know, somewhat close to home. And it originally started out as sort of a concept. You know, he got a few people together, some people that knew what they were doing. They built the sets. They put it together, and it sort of grew from there. They're actually looking now at expanding to some additional studio facilities out there, something that's a little larger and nicer, and gives them the room to build the kind of sets that they really want to build.
Apparently, their current facility is, I believe, a disused car dealership.
Yeah, it's an old car dealership in a town called Port Henry, which is right on Lake Champlain. Great little town. They love when the Phase Two folks come to town to shoot an episode. But it's small compared to really any studio facility that you would see. And so it would be nice if there's an opportunity to sort of expand that elsewhere.
And finally, I have to ask you this. You did have a brief cameo in one of these episodes. What was that like?
I actually had two cameos. Phase Two shot a vignette that introduced the new captain that was put on the web last July. And it's a funeral service, and about 2 minutes in, blink and you'll miss me. I was attending, got to bow my head as part of the funeral proceedings. In Bread and Savagery, yes, I also have a role as a slave in the episode, and I guess without giving anything away, I will say I got to experience a Vulcan nerve pinch. So that was very interesting to be on that side of the camera.
Was it a speaking role?
It was not a speaking role, no, which is probably just fine. I think that just the fact that the show is a labor of love. It's a volunteer effort, and so the producers are able to ask for volunteers and ask for folks to kick in support and that sort of thing. And so if there's anybody interested in getting involved, either through support or hands on or whatever, StarTrekNewVoyages.com, check it out, and you can find out ways you can get involved.